This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
This is Burr Martin of the Burr Martin Experience Podcast, or Selfie Dad as I'm known around the internet. Now, I could tell you all about my podcast by throwing in some special effects or sound bites, but I'm not going to do that, all right? I'm a busy man, brother. I'm a C-minus internet celebrity. Look, I've worked in radio for over 12 years. I've produced about 15 different shows. I worked in a comic book shop. I've done stand-up, hosted events, and I was even voted Hero of the Week in the UK. My podcast is co-hosted by my wife, and we talk about anything and everything. And occasionally, one of our three kids will interrupt to tell us what's going on in their generation. We talk about celebrities, politics, pop culture, and news stories you've probably never heard about. All right, we're radio friendly and we try and keep things upbeat. So join me every week for the Burr Martin Experience Podcast here on the Pants Pending Studios Network. That's Burr Martin. So put a BM in your podcast catcher today and it'll be who wrote the poop joke? I am a C-minus internet celebrity. Which one of you writers wrote that? You go back and you work for Late Night with Chevy Chase. That won't fly here.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Russia is the world's Florida.
Get ready for the Social Hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, Deese sits down one-on-one with musician Willie Woosticks of Free the Jester and From Us Comes Knowledge. And now your host. He's still trying to beat the first level of Guitar Hero. Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming around for another episode, guys. We know Jeremy and Sophie this evening. Gave them the night off to go enjoy while I am on my hectic summer schedule. You guys know it's something different every week. It's been a little, you know how this goes. It's been long enough, a couple years of this. Summertime comes around. And I'm on the move, got things to do. But in studio with me tonight, I've got our guest. We got Willie Woosticks. Willie, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Doing good, man. Thank you for coming in. I'm looking forward to talking to you. We've been trying to make this this episode happen for a while. I'm glad we can finally get you in studio.
Yeah, man. I'm stoked to be here.
Yeah, man. It's going to be a little one-on-one between Willie and I, guys, So which is nice. I don't get to do that as often as I used to. I do enjoy it, though. It's nice to kind of sit down with someone sometimes, and you can really dig in a little bit more and kind of figure out, you know, them and what they're doing and, you know, what got them to where they are now. So I'm looking forward to doing this. Before we get into it too much, though, as always, guys, please go to PantsPending or Patreon /PantsPending. Check out all the exclusive content from behind the scenes across the network. You can do a one-time donation or subscribe and get all sorts of bonus content. We've got some shows coming back that have been on hiatus for a while. I heard the Dog Lady Rants, as well as possibly a fan favorite, Why Haven't I Seen This, maybe coming back too. So always visit Pants Pending, the network, and see what new is coming. I've got a bunch of film stuff I'm working on that we're going to be cranking out there, too. My cohort in the Nearly Famous tour, Michael Glatzmeyer, and I are working on a film project, kind of a web series, and all sorts of fun stuff. So check in, and as always, go to Deese Comedy, too. You can always find updates there or on the Facebook page at The Social Hour. All right, now enough of the business, enough of the paying the bills and all that shit. Let's talk to Willie. So one thing I just learned right before we're heating up the mics here is that Willie is not from Spokane. Are you from New York originally? Is that where you're from?
Yeah, man, born in Manhattan.
Born in Manhattan. That's, yeah. So Manhattan to a lot of people, I was just on my way to Seattle to do some shows last weekend with a friend of mine who is not from Spokane either. He's actually, I believe he was born in like San Diego, but he's lived all over. I mean, all over the United States, Florida, Hawaii, Alabama. He lived in Spain and stuff, but ended up in Spokane. I'm from LA originally, ended up in Spokane. It's not a place, I feel like everyone I know here is just ends up here. It's like a place people, it's like this weird catch-all. It's, you know, it's like that little drainage catch in the bottom of your sink. It just kind of catches people and you don't make, some people slip through, but most of them just end up here. So how did you end up from Manhattan to Spokane?
Well, the line I always give people is I left Manhattan to go to Spokane for the same reason everybody does. Mostly the culture.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, diversity.
Diversity.
You know, they've got whites, off-whites.
You know, you got Russians. Applebee's out here, yeah. Olive Garden out here, Red Lobster.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
they got that new Olive Garden up north, man. That place is nice.
I heard.
Yeah, all you can eat breadsticks. That's the shit right there. That funny thing is that place, I used to do some work up there, and when they were building that place, when it first opened, there was literally a line around the building for like a couple weeks. And a couple things, I had a couple thoughts on that. First, we still had an Olive Garden downtown at that point. That wasn't the only Olive Garden in town, okay? Like, it wasn't like this was the only Olive Garden. It was the only Olive Garden. They didn't have a monopoly on all-you-can-eat soup, salad,
well, the amount of people in this town that think that that's good Italian food is...
Well, right. That's the other thing. It's almost embarrassing. You're like, you're waiting in line for that? I'd wait in line to not go there. You know, I'd wait in line to just get kicked in the balls and go home before I waited in line to go to Olive Garden. And, you know, yeah, it's especially being from New York, probably treated to very good Italian food compared to what we have here.
Yeah. I mean, the food in general, that's, you know, people ask me what I miss the most coming from New York to here. And there's a couple, you know, the main thing is, as a young man, you know, especially in my 20s and my late teens and 20s, you can live like a prince, man. I mean, it's the city of convenience. Anything is delivered to your door at any time of night. But
sure.
The food, the different culture, you know, it's everybody from everywhere else all over the world. So the food, you know, that comes out in the food and everything else. And it's, you know, not that there's bad food in Spokane. You just can't get it after fucking 9 o'clock at night, man.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's the bummer of it. It's, but I do love Spokane. It's, you know, it's a lot smaller. It's, you know, it's not nearly as fucking expensive as,
well, God,
as
yeah,
Manhattan.
No kidding.
It's, you know, a little easier to live in. And especially as an artist these days, you don't need to be in the New Yorks and the LAs or the Austins or, you know, places like that. I mean, it helps. And I mean, that's any advice I'd give to a young musicians, especially in Spokane with any kind of talent, is, well, pack your fucking car up and drive down to LA. You know, especially you drummers out there, if you're anywhere decent, get out of town, because people are looking for talent in those towns. But really, you can do things like this. I mean, we're sitting here, we're in your crib, we're doing a podcast. It's good, that goes out all over the world. You know, we have great infrastructure.
Oh, we don't actually release this.
Oh, we don't release this.
Yeah, this doesn't go anywhere.
Oh, right on. Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's just there was, you know, you take into the fact that you don't really need to be in those cities anymore to get yourself out to the right people when you're doing art. And, you know, the standard of living out here is just so much fucking better. It's that, but I mean, you miss the convenience, you miss the food, you miss, you know, bar time's fucking 4 o'clock at night.
Sure.
And if you know the bartender, they'll lock the door and you can sit in there and they'll let you smoke and do whatever you want till six, seven o'clock in the morning.
Till they gotta mop up and open the doors again.
Exactly.
There is some benefit. I mean, I do love big city. How long have you been in Spokane?
About six years. So getting used to it now.
It does take a while, because I moved here. It's been about 10 years since I've been here. Moved from L.A. to here. And again, it wasn't really intentional, just kind of happened. That catch-all of Spokane again, this weird magnet of just like transients, I suppose. And it took me a long time. It probably took me about almost 6 years to just finally give into the fact that this I was going to be here a while. And it probably wasn't till about 7 or 8 years in that I'm like, all right, I'm Spokane's home.
Right.
You know, it took a long time. Not that I didn't like it. I liked the people. I think there's really good people in Spokane. And that's one of the few things that kept me here is there's really very genuine people, which you don't run into. I've never been to New York, so I don't know. I can't speak for New York, but as for LA, it's very superficial. Everyone's out for themselves. There's every interaction seems either aggressive or disingenuous.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing. New York for sure, it's a thing. And the thing I noticed always being in LA was that you can, especially within, you know, if you're talking about music or comedy or acting or anything like that, modeling, it's always, hey, man, like you get in the conversation and it's never like about you. You know, they just want to tell you what they're doing.
Sure.
They just want to tell you what they're, it's almost like a Facebook page before there were Facebook pages.
Sure.
Like they just want to make everything look better. And it was kind of like, this is who I know and this is what I'm doing. And they don't really care about, you know, what's going on with anyone else.
Yeah. California is the place where they originated renting rims for vehicles. You know, that was like that is like the ultimate in like douchebag narcissism. Of like, hey, I can't afford these, but I definitely want people to think that maybe I can afford these.
Right.
So I need to get a note on some 20s.
Right. But the weather's great.
Yeah, the weather's great. But other than that, it's a nightmare. What brought you from? I mean, besides the culture, obviously, as we discussed the great cultural cornucopia that is Spokane. What brought you to Spokane?
My fiance actually, she was an actress living in the city. Also worked in LA for a while and. Originally from Spokane Valley.
Okay.
So I kind of came out on just like some meet the parents type shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and we came out in August. This was, you know, like I said, 6-7 years ago, something like that. We came out in August and we spent about 10 days out here. And I kind of just dug it. Like I said, they took me up north to Lake Sullivan, beautiful glacier lake up near the border of Canada. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, you know, something I'd never seen. My mom is from Connecticut, so I went to high school and stuff in Connecticut and in a little fishing village, Stonington, Connecticut. Shout out, nobody.
Yeah. But we're big there. Yeah, we've got a lot of
huge
fans
in Stonington, Connecticut.
What up, Wayne? In Connecticut.
So I, you know, it's not that I hadn't, you know, I spent my whole life in, you know, in a city, but I hadn't really ever seen mountains or, you know, lakes like that. And I kind of just. Even, you know, Spokane's, you know, a lot of people say Spokane's a city and Hilliard's rough as fuck and all this shit. But, you know, it's really a really nice town and there's a lot of space and you go 5 minutes any fucking direction, you're in the middle of nowhere here. And that all kind of appealed to me. And, you know, I got home and I just kind of looked around our shitty apartment and we were in the process of moving to Brooklyn. And it was just like, you know, why don't we go out to Spokane and, you know. We'll crash your parents for 6 months, get a job, save some money, you know, get a little bit better of an apartment out in New York. And, you know, in the process of doing all that, they legalized weed and I'm still fucking here.
Yeah. And then it's like, well, I guess I'm staying. Although Colorado's got weed and mushrooms now.
They
so
do.
It's like, it's decriminalized the mushrooms. That's a step closer.
That's, you know, and that's the thing, you know, all my friends, you know, I used to ride the festivals, the music festival circuit a lot, not as a musician, just as a fan. And, you know, so I got a lot of friends, had a lot of fun with, and I had to explain to them, it's not legal.
Yeah.
It just means they won't lock you in jail. They're still going to take them away from
you. Right, yeah, like, they're just not going to be as mad at you for it.
There's not going to be the mushroom shop, bro. Right. Like, I'd love it. I'd go there.
That'd be
but
great.
It'd be pretty fantastic.
One day. I feel like we're closer. Now, how long did it take you after being in Spokane? Did you think, like, fuck, maybe I made a mistake? You know, like winter hits, it's this oppressive long. I mean, not that they don't have winter in New York, but I feel like if you're in the city still is kind of alive and you can do more.
Yeah.
Plus there's public transit, which doesn't exist really. I mean, you know.
And that's the motherfucker of it. That, you know, I never had to drive and I still, after 6 years, you saw my friend drop me off there. And, that was definitely a big challenge coming out here. I still haven't fixed that, but, I don't know. I was pretty comfortable. No, I don't drive.
Not at all?
I drove a little. I got a license when I was like 17, and they took that away by the time I was 19.
Was it like just too many crashes?
Yeah, dude. I totaled like 3 cars and had like 16 accidents in like 2.5 years or some shit.
What? So you know how to... Well, it sounds like you don't really know how.
No, I don't.
You've been behind a wheel, but you're not...
I've been behind a wheel, yeah. I'm not good at it. Yeah. You know, they're even like... But it helps because, you know, I never have to drive the tour bus. I never have to, you know, do any... I'm never the designated driver.
Sure.
It's But I'm trying to get my license now. So
yeah, that's why I tell every new girlfriend I have, like, yeah, I accidentally bit one of my ex-girlfriend's labias off. So no eating pussy for me. Just can't do it. Every time I've done it, it's been a big accident. So no eating pussy for me. Sorry, I would. I want. Don't trust me. I want to. I just, it's, you know, it's high risk.
I wish I'd known that.
Yeah,
before
you got to think ahead,
age, man.
You got to think ahead.
I'm too deep in. Yeah. Now.
So.
But like I said, my fiance was an actress out in the city, and we kind of just ended up out here, and because she's from Spokane, we moved out here just to save some money, and
yeah,
just kind of still out here, and actually, you know, recently bought a house and getting married out in Liberty Lake this summer, so
nice.
You know, it looks like I'll be around here for a while, and I don't know, it didn't take me too long to get used to it.
You guys have a minister for that ceremony?
Fuck no, dude.
I am ordained.
Are you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I have credentials.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll
so,
keep that in mind.
Okay.
Yeah, because we don't want anyone religious doing it.
Oh
yeah,
no, it's not real, dude. I was drunk. I was like real drunk one night and got on my computer and decided I want to do it. You just click yes.
It's really that fucking easy.
Yeah, yeah. They pay $25 and click yes.
I think there was a Friends episode about that.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah. I just wanted to say I could do it, and I've actually booked a shit ton of weddings this year. So
do you get paid for that?
Yeah. Yet? Oh yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's a good avenue. I should look into that.
It's God, man. Yeah, I make pretty good side money on that during this time of year. I've got like, I think 6 or 7 weddings booked this year, and depending on what it is. In what I'm doing and where it's at, you know, I mean, up to $500. I mean, I've done weddings for like like friends of mine. If it's local and it's like a quick ceremony and they're friends, I'll do it for like, you know, $50 or something just to do it. But yeah, I mean, shit, if it's people who are contacting me and want to do it and they want me to MC and do some comedy, it's like,
that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, fork it over, man. Let's do this.
It's not, you know, because I will say, like, you say the MCing thing, it's fucked up. It's the, I don't know if it's the stage manager in me, because, you know, with my band Free the Jester, we put on a lot of our own shows, and,
yeah,
you know, because of that, we end up, you know, doing the whole production and everything and stage managing and running the whole event. And I find myself at a lot of things like weddings and just like, you know, sitting there during the ceremony and like, these fucking people don't know how to run a show.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, so it's,
this
you
is
know,
no fun.
This is, yeah, you got to move it along, man. Yeah. You got to get it going. This is bullshit right now. People are hungry. It's hot as fuck out here. Get it, you know, so it's, that's interesting that you say that. It's not a bad avenue, man. I, you know, kind of MC, organize a little bit of a, you know.
Yeah, you do it all, man.
Move
we
the people
one-stop
along.
Shop. Yeah.
Especially, you know, if you, you know, you're a comedian, you know, timing, you know, things like that. So you, I mean, I was at a wedding last summer, man. And they had a friend marry him, and it's the most cliche thing in the fucking world, but he literally came out with the Webster defines love as,
yeah,
blah 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 blah, like that class. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me, right? like you got, someone's got to do something.
Yeah,
you gotta make
it a little nicer than that.
You get, oh,
yeah,
man,
I mean, I always talk to the bride and groom about what they want too. I mean, I you know, I want to give them the experience they want also, but
right.
I mean, if they'll, a lot of times, like, we wrote our vows, just kind of, let's do this. I'm like, all right, man, it's fine, easy enough.
There you go, man.
Let's do it.
That's not a bad, I'm gonna look into that.
Yeah,
shit.
Literally, it's like the universal church on is what you do, and it's, you can even pick a title. I'm a pope, so I chose,
oh, right,
pope. Yeah, because
right,
I figured
on.
Not a lot of those.
No, there's, yeah, like one, right?
Yeah, I think there's just one. I mean, currently there's been a few
currently
in the past, but there's
Bell,
just,
well,
one.
The last guy was a Nazi, right?
Yeah,
yes,
Benedict.
They kicked him out.
Yeah, he was short lived.
Yeah,
because I feel like John Paul, Pope John Paul, was the one that was like the second, he was I feel like he was the Pope my entire life.
Yeah, he was Pope forever, right?
Yeah, and then it was Benedict for he was there for like a weekend, like a long weekend. But he was there for like a 4-day weekend. And then they got this new guy who's like kind of hippie Pope. He's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, he's kind of like...
He's like, gay, suck dick, drink, yeah, whatever, fuck, who cares?
Dude? I also heard he wanted to release the funds of the church, which would be a super cool thing.
Oh, God, but... that'd be crazy. He's got to... They've got to be trying to assassinate
him. They'll kill him,
They'll
kill him.
He's got to before they let
they'll
that
go
happen.
Full Da Vinci Code
yeah.
on that fucking guy.
They'll be found on the bed, you know, in the fucking... what were we talking about? Oh, you made it to Spokane. You got to Spokane.
Yeah, I made it to Spokane. One way or another.
Yeah, you got here, and it's been... And again, did you ever regret, like, did you have a moment of like, fuck, this is maybe not...
You know, it's not that I'm a... I never had a moment of regret. I did have a little bit of a... And I'm not necessarily a big political guy. I'm a big believer in, you know, everybody on every side of every political issue is fucked.
Oh, but I said if someone runs for office, I think they have a personality disorder.
Oh, you got to be fucking... You got to have, like, the biggest ego in the world to think that you can be president of the... Like, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, that end game is just, like, full of narcissism.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it's insane. It's complete on insanity, but... It's a little, and again, I wasn't in New York for it, so, like, and I know, you know, part of me knows that, like, my liberal friends were going just as off the handle for Bernie Sanders as kind of the conservative side it was going off the handle for Trump out here, and it was, you know, I don't know if it was more of an issue of, it was just such a hot fucking election, or it was an issue of just, like, I never, you know, New York, not that, you know, I lean conservative, I lean liberal on many different subjects, but New York was always like, I never really thought racism still existed.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, definitely.
Like, there's definitely, like, Italians don't like the Irish, you know, Puerto Ricans don't like the Dominicans. There's definitely a lot of that going on in New York, but everybody kind of gets along. It's we're bigots out there, but we're not racist.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I never really,
it's
you know.
More classist than, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe more classist than racist.
But at the end of the day, we're all from fucking New York, and past the Hudson River might as well be the fucking graveyard, so
right.
It doesn't
yeah.
matter. So, but I guess a little bit more of, I'd never lived, when the election happened, I'd never lived in a place that was as conservative. Not that Spokane or Washington is the most conservative place in the world, but it was really something I'd never seen.
Yeah, it's different. It's certainly different.
Yeah, and that was the one time that I didn't necessarily regret living here, but it was a little bit like, oh, this is interesting.
Well,
this is interesting. Like, I have to explain to you that black people are equal. Like,
yeah,
that,
it sneaks up on you because you'll be talking to people casually thinking it's just normal conversation, and then
I've never been
like,
a racist with dreadlocks.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like before I came to Spokane.
Yeah, that's there's definitely a lot of that. Yeah, they just sneak up on you and like you know, and then they'll just throw in a sentence and they'll be like, yeah, and then you know the blacks are over there, and you're like, wait, what? Like, wait,
exactly.
What did you say? Because you don't really know. It is odd. Yeah, I always say Spokane is it's like a big city in a little town's body, unfortunately.
That's fucking brilliant.
Cuz I mean we are Spokane's the second biggest city in Washington State
next to
Seattle,
okay.
Which is, you know, which is kind of crazy to think about because you go to the west side. I don't know if you've spent much time over there.
A little
there.
Bit, just but, for gigs and
yeah,
shit. But
Seattle obviously seems like a big city, but when you go from Seattle to like Tacoma, which is the third biggest city in Washington State, mm-hmm. You never seem like you leave a city really. So you always just seem like, oh, this is a giant city. But
right.
But like they're separate cities. When you go to Spokane, we are just like this island, and you go outside of it, you're like, there's nothing. Until they hit Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? it is odd. Things have changed a lot in the 10 years I've lived here, but it's a little cow town still. I mean, it is,
you know, it's a great line, a little, you know, a big city in a little town's body, or however you put it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's a really good way to describe. So, and it's kind of what I like about it. It's kind of,
gives it a charm, some charm.
It gives it a little bit of charm. But you know, on the other hand, I've met some of the chillest fucking people I've ever met in the world out here. You know, especially in the music scene out here. And I don't know if you see this in the comedy world at all, but on the in the music world, I mean, we have a knitting factory in Brooklyn.
Sure.
And
yeah,
it
yeah.
holds about, I think it holds about 1,000 people or so, 900,000 people. And I mean, as a local New York band, if you know, if you get on the right show, if you know the right guy, you get in there, you might get in there for a good show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Out here, I mean, they're Knitting Factory, same corporation, you know, big music club. You got, you know, it holds 1,200 people. I mean, my bands have played there a bunch now over the years, and people have come out for the shows, and we've had packed houses there, and the support out here for art locally seems to be a lot better. And I mean, that might be a case of like, there's not as many people doing it. Like I said before, you know, if you're in New York and you're LA, like, yeah, whatever you're doing is cool, but this is what the fuck I'm doing right now. You know, everybody's doing something.
There's also
like,
more options.
Yeah.
There's a million things going on in LA, and one night there's like two things going on in Spokane.
Exactly. You know, you tell someone like, I used to tell people, like, people be like, what you do in New York? Like, what do you do? Oh, well, you know, I'm a rapper. And they'd be like, why? Like out here, they're like, oh, that's cool, man. Yeah. Like, when's your show? Like, you know, it's a little bit more so, which I think in a way it makes you weaker as an artist, and it's something that, you know, I try to keep in the back of my head that like I feel like you can get to a certain point in Spokane. I don't know if this is the same thing with comedy, but you get to a point where like your friends will come out here, your family will come out here, you know, you'll have fans come out here that are loyal to your thing.
Yeah.
Whereas like it kind of just doesn't exist so much. Like New York, like I said, a million people are doing a million different things.
Sure.
And there's so much shit to do, and it's
and I could be wrong, but it seems to me like the music scene has a better or more rabid following in Spokane. It's a good music town. It's not a great comedy town.
Club is beautiful, though.
The club's great, but do you know how many people I talk to that are, I'm like, oh, I'm at the comedy club this weekend. They're like, we have a comedy club? I'm like, dude, what the fuck is wrong?
So you say that, though, but so I went, this has got to be, this is like a fucking year and a half ago. I used to do a lot of open mics, stand-up open mics out in the city for about a year and a half, kind of got into it. Part of me still says that when music is done, that's really what I want to do. But, you know, that was very much, it was a thing where it was like, you know, you come in, you pay $5, you get 5 minutes, and you perform in front of a bunch of guys that aren't looking at you. They're looking at their notebook because they're scribbling down their jokes for when they're going to go up. And I came out here and I did the open mic, which was 3 minutes, which was strange at the club. But, I didn't have to pay any money, and not only did the other comics watch everybody's set, but there were just general people in the
audience
for it to see comedy, which was a shock to me. But again, I think that as nice as that is, and I, you know, not that I want to undercut, like I love all my fans, especially in Spokane. Like I'm part of two Spokane bands. I love Spokane. And I'd do anything for anyone that's ever listened to a song or bought a t-shirt or felt something off of one of my songs. But at the end of the day, it is a very accepting town. And I think like that can make you weak as an artist. And you gotta, if you're an artist in this town, I think you gotta get out and really see what you're made of in other markets. And the beauty of it is that we do have Seattle right there. And Seattle is just as tough a market as anywhere there is for any kind of art you're trying to do. Maybe more so because it does seem to have a little bit of a pretentious chip on its shoulder.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like,
try doing comedy.
We're just as sophisticated as LA or New York here in Seattle, if you didn't know.
Yeah, they're pretty snobby over there. Actually, I don't do much comedy in Seattle or Olympia for those reasons. I love Tacoma. Mm-hmm. I love Tacoma.
I see a lot of specials filmed in Seattle, though, I feel like.
It's not a bad place to film a special, but if you're filming a special, you're at a point where you have a built-in audience, and the people who are coming to that show are there for you, and they love you.
Right.
So if you're a comedian on my level, or even a lot of guys who are even bigger than I am doing shows in certain areas, it can be the crowds, if you're not their cup of tea, when it's their tea is very precious mm-hmm. in Seattle, it could be a rough show. So, I mean, let's call it coffee since Starbucks there and they love that shit so much.
Right.
Yeah, their cup of coffee is very precious to them. So it can be interesting. But yeah, Spokane's a great place to cut your teeth in the arts. I think you can, like, you're very right. I've seen people get their growth stunted because they never leave.
They never
try to take it on the road. You know, I'm basically a road comic now. I'm on the road a lot. So, and that's, I like it. My dog and my girlfriend hate it. But, you know, that's part of
it's kind of the dream though, right?
It is
a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I like it. I get worn out a little bit. It's coming up and be gone for a couple of weeks. So I'm going to get mm-hmm. real worn out. You know, I miss my dog, miss my girlfriend, sleeping right. in my own bed.
It is interesting. You know, I don't know. I just, like, personally, I feel, you know, there's when we're kind of like, and with Free the Dresser, we ride around in a fucking old 1985 school bus and shit.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, when we're out on the road, I'm kind of like, you know, sleeping in the bunk on the, you know, and we're just trying to get to the next show. And you're not earning a lot of money out there. But, like, there is something about it. Like, there is something about, like, you know, I got paid for.
Yeah, doing what paid, you love.
You're doing what I love, yeah. You know, and I'm making a work out here. And it's
it is great. It is freeing. And it's something, I think it's a feeling that a lot of people in life never experience because they don't have a passion and they don't know how to monetize it if they do.
I think a lot of them are scared.
Well, that's absolutely true.
A lot
true.
Of them are scared.
Yeah. I mean, it's having a passion, putting yourself out there in art especially, is that's a scary thought to most people.
Were you ever worried about talent?
What's that?
Were you ever worried about your talent?
I don't think so. I don't think so, no, because I've always self-criticized. I'm a hardest critic and always want to do better. But
as any good artist should be.
Yeah, but I mean, I think I'm always like I've always said yes to any project. I work pretty well under pressure. Mm-hmm. I did, you know, improv comedy for a long time. I've written comedy. And so, I mean, I think I can do almost any situation.
Right.
I'm not always the best, but I know I can do it, you know? So I was never really worried about that. And usually I just throw myself and say yes, and then figure it out and just make it work. You know,
the reason I've never been, and I was an athlete before I was really big into playing music and things like that. And I was never...
What'd you play? Baseball?
I did. I played baseball. I was a big... baseball and soccer, mostly baseball.
Were you first baseman?
No, actually, I caught up until high school. And then when I got to high school, I was an infielder.
Okay.
And, you know, nobody kind of foresaw that I was going to be 6'4" and lanky as a motherfucker.
That's why
I said first
baseman.
Someone probably should have had me at first base or pitching. Yeah. I've never been the most talented on the baseball field. I've never been the most talented, you know, playing music, but I just was like, fuck it, man, I'm going to get better. I'm going to try. I'm going to practice and I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to have fun with it. And like, I think a lot of people just are worried that they're not good enough. And I don't really think there's definitely people have natural abilities for things, but you know, I think if you want to do something and you think you can figure it out, fucking figure it out, man, cultivate it, you know, give it a shot.
Like, absolutely.
You know, that holds a lot of people back. And especially, you know, you ask me about Spokane and kind of what shocks me about Spokane, it's the amount of people that get locked down when they're 22 fucking years old in this town with, you know, wife or a husband and kids and things like that, and just kind of never leave town. And it's like, man, you know, at 22, I was just scratching the surface of figuring out what the fuck I wanted to do.
Right, no
like
kidding.
I was still, you know, 4 or 5 years removed from meeting, you know, the woman I was going to spend the rest of my life with. It was I think a lot of people don't give themselves a chance. That's kind of what I realized moving to Spokane from New York. But, you know, in New York, you're surrounded by people who are doing something.
Yeah.
They're all there, especially because it's everyone from everywhere else. They're all there to fucking do something. You know, everybody, everybody's an actor, everybody's a director, everybody's an artist, everybody's right. a musician, you know, whatever it is, a dancer.
Right, busboy by day and, exactly. you know, yeah, act, you know, poet at night or whatever.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. Or, you know, they're there on their parents' money.
Sure,
whatever
yeah, that
the fuck
sounds
it
better.
Is, which is a lot more of what you see out there right
really?
Now, which
okay.
is why I don't think it's...
Well, that's kind of, that's not even, that's part of it is the challenge, you know,
yeah.
of doing it, you
yeah.
know, and the opposition, the friction. And if you got a,
yeah.
if you got a free ride, it's real, you know, why the effort isn't actually there. It's not genuine, you know, sacrifice and effort.
No, it's not. It's not. I don't think. Although I did, you know, I did see it. I grew up with a kid who grew up with quite a lot of money. Grew up, you know, I mean, talking dad owned casinos and like multiple fucking.
That's pretty good.
Continents and shit.
Yeah,
and he wanted to be a director, and but his parents made him work for it. You
that
know,
guy
his parents
is Steven
made him work
Spielberg.
For
Spielberg.
He's not Steven Spielberg, but he's doing good. You know, he's out
sure.
in L.A. and he's you know he's coming up. He was involved with Project Greenlight and like he was, but his parents always made him work for it. His luckily his mom had come from like a very grounded family, a very humble family,
that's good.
And gave him that grounding. And you know he's doing very well, and you know he's able to take a lot of hard work and that. You know, seed money that he can, that he does have access to, and be successful with
do
it. And you know, I can't hate on that by any means. But you know, it's you know, to get back to whatever the fuck I was saying. I think people, you know, I think people are scared to go out there and try shit.
Well, I think so too. And the especially you made a good point in Spokane. You know, get locked down at 22. I lived in Western Montana, in Missoula, Montana, for a couple of years in my mid-teens, kind of off and on. And I saw that a lot with people who are from that area, and I think it happens a lot with people here. I mean, I can go back to Missoula now and know people that I knew when I was 16, and I can tell you what bar they're going to be at and what night, and that was, you know,
right.
15 years ago, or,
right.
or not that long ago, 10 years ago. Wait, no, 20 years ago. Jesus Christ, how old am I? 20 years ago.
Huh. I find myself doing that a lot more these days.
And it's, to me, it's sad. I was like you. I always knew I have, you know, it's part of the reason I never had kids and never got married because I knew all these things I wanted to do
mm-hmm.
that I wasn't, I'm not going to put these other things on my plate until I'm at a better place,
right,
you know?
Right.
And people just kind of, you know, I know I have friends here in Spokane who, great people. I love them, but they've been, you know, they're my age and they've been bartending since they were 21 years old. And
right.
that's just kind of what they do. And I'm like, is that really all you wanted ever? Not that, I mean, yeah, we all need bartenders every now and then, but isn't there, was there ever a something more that
like
you
must have had a dream.
Yeah.
You must
have
wanted
right?
to do something. Like you must have saw something and been like, I want to try that.
Yeah. My thing was always, I was always willing to try anything and go for it. You know, I realized a long time ago, you just kind of have to do it yourself and, you know, hopefully you can make some with it. And that's the thing. I mean, I've said even in Spokane, there's probably innately funnier people than I am, but no one's willing to put, you know, people don't want to put in work, so I'll just
see,
fucking work my ass off.
That's
and then
the interesting thing to me about stand-ups is like some of the funniest fucking guys I ever met in my life are working at the dump back home, man.
Yeah,
you know, it's like if you had just kind of gotten the idea to, you know, kind of get on stage for 5 minutes and just talk into a microphone, like you might have caught a little bit of a bug and tried
right.
something, dog. Like,
yeah,
it's especially with that particular skill set, it's just you know, and you meet funny people just in the
yeah.
weirdest places in life, and people that are just characters, just fucking riots, and you know, they're
well, some of the weird thing with stand up too though is some of the funniest people I know would be terrible stand-up comics though, because there is an art to it about finessing it to figuring out how to make it work on stage and the timing and understanding when it's not, like in conversation. One of my buddies, Ethan, he is arguably one of the funniest guys I've ever met in my life, and I've worked with some of the, you know, funniest people in the world,
right?
And he, just talking to him is just hilarious. But even he'll say, like, I could never do, like, you cultivating that and putting it through a prism of like making your synapses understand how to connect the thought to
right,
delivering
right.
it in a comedic way.
Well,
is
the timing and the thing I've noticed a lot too, I don't know if you notice with comedians a lot, but I notice it with a lot of musicians on me. And the thing I love about my band is no one in my band is like this. Everybody's out there just wants a bigger and bigger, bigger crowd. But like,
yeah,
people are fucking scared of the stage, man. People are afraid of the stage. I mean, you'll see it, you know, you'll see it at an open mic. I've been, you know, in open mics in New York with, you know, three people who aren't even looking at you.
Sure.
And people get up on the stage and a light hits them and they grab the mic and it kind of makes a sound and it scares the fucking piss out of them, man. And for me, that was never a thing. For me, it was, I'm an asshole. I'm an attention whore. I want people to fucking look at me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always kind of been like that. I don't know if that's a bad trait. It's probably a bad trait, but I don't really care. I think fear stops a lot of people, man.
Well, I think that's common. That probably is a common denominator in everything in life. But yeah, the arts, a lot. I mean, that's when people, you know, you talked about the comedy club and their open mic and how there's actually attendance. There's comics who do just that mic, and I'm like, it's 3 minutes. You can't really see the audience. There isn't actually an audience, and it's once, you know, but then like do the open mic at Chan's Red Dragon on a Friday night where there's 30 drunk, coked out people who don't give a fuck and are yelling at you and hate you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do that in, or like when go to the district on Thursday night and do an open mic in front of the bartender and maybe two other comics that don't give a fuck about what you have to say.
Dude, I'm cooking at the district right now, actually, on Thursday nights.
Yeah. So
It's ugly. It's ugly. Any comic listen to it. It's fucking ugly, but you're right. Fucking do it.
It makes you better.
Stage time is so fucking valuable. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, like I used to do open mics when I was in New York, and it's kind of like comedy has always been a real special place in my heart, and it is something that I'd like to get back to eventually.
Sure.
That, you know, the band, you know, you can only do so many fucking things with your time. But
I believe me, I get.
What I've noticed is that with playing with Free the Jester, which, you know, has had bigger crowds than anything I've ever done before and is giving me more stage time and all that, that was my biggest the biggest fucking hurdle out there is not, and it wasn't so much fear, it was, you know, so like you can get over the fear, but it's like, what's it like to be up there? What's it like to really like talk and hear yourself out of the monitor and like understand the timing and like understand like what the lights feel like in your eyes and how like, yeah, you're going to be sweating in 3 minutes because that shit's beating down on you. And it's all that is part of it.
Yeah.
All that is part of it. And yeah, I think, you know, it's, you're right, man. Like I'm sure there's a ton of comics in this town right now. They're saying, well, fuck, I'm not going to go to the district on Thursday night to do an open mic.
Makes
well,
you
fuck
better,
you,
though.
Man.
Makes
then you're not going to get good because that's where you're going to get good.
Go any comic who asks me for advice if they're new, I say go to 4 open mics a week for a year and then come back and talk to me. If you're still interested, we'll talk. Yeah.
Do as much as you can. Do as much. Grind yourself. Dude.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
Feel uncomfortable. You feel awkward as fuck because I've done shows in venues in front of people. And like I had to do a casino gig in Pendleton, Oregon a couple weeks ago. And it was a nightmare. I've been told it's not a great room. It's not fun. If they pay well. And it's great. So I'm like, fuck, I don't give a shit. It's pays. And I'm standing up there doing 35 minutes in front of like 18 people who don't give a fuck.
Don't care.
And like the Blazers playoff game is playing on the TVs.
Right.
And I'm up there like, and they don't fucking care. And I'm like, guess what? I'm getting paid either way, motherfuckers.
Exactly.
I'm getting through. I'm doing this time. What do you?
I'm here to work, bro. Yeah.
And I always say it's like, feeling uncomfortable is a good thing for people. I always akin it to like astronauts when they're in space, when they come back, they have to go through this process of coming back to gravity, because when there's no gravity in space, they're literally like their bone density lessens and their muscles atrophy because there's no gravity or friction on them.
Right.
And when people live in this reality of no friction or nothing opposing, you know, pressing on them, they just kind of like atrophy in life because they don't, you know, I mean, in that idea of like, man, fucking feel uncomfortable every now and then.
Exactly,
it'll make you a
dude.
Better person.
It will. It absolutely fucking will, man. So, it'll teach you how to react to those situations.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, that's the thing about it. Like, I feel like there's not as much, people don't have as much respect for the fact that before, before that debut album that gets all the press on AP Magazine, before the Netflix special, there were 10,000 gigs before that.
Oh, yeah.
And 99.9% of them fucking sucked.
Yeah.
Like, that's what, and that's, you know, it's, we live in such an instant gratification society now that, like, it's a weird connection, but there's these artists coming up. I see a lot of musicians that are just like, they're 21, 22, and they're like, why don't I have a fucking record deal yet? Why am I not on Warped?
Yeah.
Why am I not doing that? Why am I not doing this? This guy's videos has all these views, and this guy's video, and I'm not doing this, and he shouldn't have this, and I'm working hard. And it's like, dude, like,
it's a 10,000 like, hours thing.
It's, yeah, you got to fucking work, bro. Like, yeah, you got to put in your goddamn time. Like, what are you even talking about right now? Like, get out of town. It's nobody has any kind of sanctity for the real work that goes into it. They think this shit just happens, man.
Yeah.
And that's just not how it is. It's and that's, I think, you know, I talk about fear. That's what scares people. Like, I gotta actually work hard at this.
Right. It's a meritocracy for the most part. You're gonna put in the work.
And the most talented people, we talk about the most naturally talented people, they're working harder than anybody.
Yeah.
They're working harder than anybody.
So let's talk about your bands real quick, since we're, you know, that's kind of why you're here. You've got two groups you're with. It's Free the Jester, and that's where you play bass and hip hop vocalist. Is that correct?
Yes,
and then From Us Come Knowledge, where you're the front man on that. So,
yes, sir.
Which band was first with these?
Free the Jester was definitely first. Okay. We've been doing Free the Jester for about 5 years now. Actually just had our 5th year anniversary show at the Knitting Factory on April 20th, 420, the official, the unofficial birthday of Free the Jester, because we like to ride that cannabis line, not so shyly.
Yeah.
That's my baby. I started with my best friend in the world, Cameron Moore, who I met when I moved out here, and pretty quickly found a guitarist. We actually started a country band.
Damn.
It was weird. It's a long fucking convoluted story. And then we met this metal guitarist, Maddie, who just another best dear friend in the world, pretty immediately. And kind of the three of us have been together for a long time. And we came up with Free the Jester, and we've been through a couple of drummers, and we've added a fifth member now, who actually, he's the guy who broke your fucking toilet earlier. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
Shout out, Lane. but it's kind of just grown, and like I said, it's been quite amazing to me. It's been fun. We just released a new single called Escape Route. You can get it pretty much we're on all our music, along with that is on iTunes and Spotify and Pandora, and pretty much as I understand it, anywhere you can get music digitally.
Okay.
I don't really cover that part of the business, but anywhere I look for it, I generally find it. So you shouldn't have too much trouble finding it. And we just, like I said, we released a new single and video, Escape Route. If you're going to watch the video, watch it on YouTube, because I want to get those views up.
Yeah, those.
it's been fun. We're starting to get ourselves on some bigger channels on the internet. We got ourselves with this new single, Escape Route, onto Montage Rock, which is a big list, and starting to get the views up, and starting to get some really nice. You know, we did about 900 people at the Knit this last show, mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, nice big show. And we've been kind of played a couple slightly bigger shows than that there, and just having fun with it. Just,
yeah,
like I said, it's a fun town, and we've been having a lot of good response from the fans out here with it. And just kind of at that point now where we're ready to kind of get it out there a little more on the road. We've been on the road a little bit the last 3 years, but really trying to make this thing as big as we can.
Yeah.
And the beauty of the world that we live in is, you know, it's, you can get yourself out there from anywhere you are. And, you know, it's a DIY community, no matter what you're doing in the art world. And we're just trying to build that. So we're recording more music, always recording at Amplified Wax with Jimmy Hill right here in Spokane.
Okay.
Which, super professional studio. Anyone out there who's looking for a place to record, you know, especially if you're
good
in the
spot.
Pacific Northwest, I would say, yeah, it's a great spot. I mean, he's recorded Escape the Fate there. He's recorded Born of Osiris, really, you know, big groups. He's got a platinum record on the wall. I don't know what the fuck it's for, but he's got one on the wall that he's somehow involved with. So I'll
audiobook of Tom Clancy's The Pelican.
Yeah, it sold a lot of copies. Jimmy kills those audiobooks. So, you know, but the point is, he's super dope and he does a beautiful professional job. And you know, he's been Amplified Wax and Jimmy Hill have been a big reason why we haven't had to really seek out the record label type thing, you know, because at the end of the day, the record label is it's a bank loan.
Yeah, it's a racket.
And if you can record yourself and book yourself, then you really don't need that.
Yeah, just keep growing that.
So, I've been doing that with Free the Jester. So trying to get that going. Things have been really well. Like I said, we got the new single out and more music coming out at the end of the summer. And then I recently started a new band called From Us Comes Knowledge with my buddy Brent, who is actually the front man of the Nixon Rodeo.
Oh, okay.
Who's a pretty big band in town.
Yep, yep.
And it kind of started as a little bit of a just like, hey, let's get together, let's have fun, let's kind of... Because I'm playing bass in Free the Jester and doing hip-hop vocals, but really at the end of the day, I'm a hip-hop artist. That's what I was doing in New York. I was doing hip-hop for years and... You know, first and foremost, I'm a lyricist, and he's a singer. He was playing guitar in Nixon and also fronting. But we were kind of like, man, wouldn't it be cool to just kind of drop our instruments and have a little bit of fun and do what we're good at? So it was like, well, what if I sing and you rap and we just build a badass band behind us? So we got our buddy Gabe, who was formerly with Hell Dorado, professional musician, does, you know, a lot of things with touring bands in Europe and stuff like that. And then our buddy Gary, who was with Wasted Breath and actually now with Nixon Rodeo, he's playing bass with them, but he's drumming in From Us Comes Knowledge. And then Eric from Concrete Grip, who, you know, classic Spokane metal band, just killer musician playing bass. And it kind of started out as, hey, man, this is a fun little project, but, you know, we started writing music together and it started getting big, and it's been...
It always gets bigger. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, it's fun, you know. It was nice because it's... With bands, you kind of start to do... Everybody kind of plays their role, but then they pick up other things that they have to do. Like, you know, at the end of the day, the reason I play bass in Free the Jester is because I kind of played bass a little bit in high school and we needed a bass player. So, you know, I can play Free the Jester songs really fucking well. You ask me to play anything else on bass, it's not going real well. But I could jam a little bit, but really, you know, at the end of like I said, I'm a lyricist, so that band From Us Comes Knowledge really was about, well, let's just do what we really, really think we can do well. And when we kind of allowed everyone to do that, it just kind of culminated into this really great sound. And you know, it turned out we also took that, you know, to the studio, and we have some music coming out. And again, you'll be able to get that on Spotify and iTunes and Pandora and everywhere here in the next few weeks. From Us Comes Knowledge. We're going to have two singles coming out, Restraints and Your Best Sucked. We're a pretty aggressive band.
So stylistically, what's the difference between the two bands, would you say?
So Free the Jester is definitely... Free the Jester is kind of about a no-holds-barred thing where... So, for instance, our frontman Cameron Camo is very much a punk rock guy. And then myself, I'm a hip-hop guy. Hip-hop, you know, raised on the classics, raised on Pink Floyd and Jim Croce and Lynyrd Skynyrd and Johnny Cash and things like that, but really a hip-hop guy at the end of the day. And then our drummer, our lead guitar, and our second kind of... He plays guitar, he plays a little bit of bass when I'm rapping, and he plays piano. He kind of jack-of-all-trades, Lane. They're all metal guys. So, and Lane's also a bit of a hip-hop head. So we kind of, at the end of the day, when you have that many personalities, when you have that many ideas in the room, it's kind of just been like, well, let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks.
Right.
And it's kind of turned into this real cool metal, punk, party rock, hip-hop vibe that we just kind of, we don't really try to, you know, the classic musician thing, well, we're not really trying to pigeonhole ourselves.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
You know, it's really just, at the end of the day, we're a party rock guy. If you want, like, if kind of, if Beastie Boys and Rage Against the Machine fucked, like, you know, we'd be the retarded cousin of that. So that's kind of what Free the Jester is. And then From Us Comes Knowledge is very much, I guess the term that the kids are throwing around these days would be called trap metal, which I love as much as I hate that term. But yeah, it's kind of like, it's, I like to think it's a better version of what Limp Bizkit was trying to do.
Okay.
You know, it's very much a metal group, but it's, you know, hip hop vocals over it. And then Brent, you know, an amazing singer, from the Nixon Rodeo, is, you know, we kind of co-front it and he's, you know, singing killer hooks over it. And I'm just kind of laying bars down on the verses. And
is it a little bit, well, we're going to listen to a song here in a second, but like the, do you know who Fort Minor is?
I've heard the name.
I think it was the guy, the like the rapper, the lyricist from like Linkin Park.
Okay.
Formed another group that was a little more hip hop.
All right.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking it. I don't know. The way it's described, it seems like it might be a little similar. It might kind of have that kind of vibe, but maybe not.
It's
I don't want to pitch.
It's a fun one. Yeah. All right. Please.
Well, do you want to listen to, should we let everyone hear the new song, Escape Room, from Free the Jester, at least?
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's say, like I said, we'll have the From Us Comes Knowledge stuff coming out here in a couple weeks. But okay. Yeah, the new single from Free the Jester, Escape Route, you can check it out on YouTube and Spotify and iTunes and Pandora and all that good stuff. And Lead Row Studios, shout out for filming it. Great, great company based out of Spokane. If any artists out there need any music videos made, anything like that, you should hit them up. And shout out to Amplified Wax for recording it.
Perfect. Let's take a listen to that real quick.
Bye.
Jeez, yeah, nice. Very nice. Now, you're... Where are we going to next song here? I'm just going to roll through the whole playlist. Now, you were the vocals on that?
No, so that was we run a few different vocal settings or vocal roles in that band. Actually, no hip hop in that one. None, unfortunately. If you want to see some of the hip hop stuff from Free the Jester, check out like Politically Correct or The Setup or something like that. But no, that was our frontman Camo singing most of the way, and then the screams. We got our lead guitar Maddie does the screams along with the guy who just joined, who I said was kind of our jack of all trades, Lane, was doing the higher screams in there. So we kind of try, you know, and that's a part of, we try to kind of bring in, we have all these different, like I said, I can rap and Camo sings and they scream. So it's kind of like, let's bring all these things together and kind of, you know, do a little bit of everything.
Let's talk about musically for you real quick here. Being from New York, hip hop guy, I'm going to ask you a couple tough questions.
All right.
What are some of your early hip hop influences?
Not early. So,
okay, well, first of all, how old are you, if I can ask?
I'm 32.
Okay. So, all right. Just gauging what you grew up on.
Definitely, you know, we're talking 90s, definitely, okay, as far as the music I grew up on. So, well, the classic story, the condensed version of the classic story I always tell that got me into hip hop was Christmas 1995. I got a boombox that had it. You know, back in the day, it had the dual tape and the CD player.
Oh yeah,
they just started coming with the CD player, right? So I got that for Christmas in 1995, and you know, going over to grandma's house and like obviously gonna bring my gift with me that my mom got me, and go over there and I walk in with this boombox, and my cousin Eric, who's 3 years older than me, kind of like grabbed me by the shoulder. He's like, "Hey man, I got something to show you." He's like, "Bring that boombox with you." And we went back into this back office that it was my grandfather's back office that no one really went into, and we plugged in the boombox, and he had gotten shout out to being from divorced families. He had gotten his dad to buy him Dr. Dre's Chronic and Doggy Style by Snoop Dogg, which, by the way, divorced fathers are great for buying you music that you're not supposed to have.
Your mom will hate it. Perfect.
Exactly. It's how I got all my bad CDs. But so he was like, "Listen, you got to hear this shit." So, and I remember we had back in the day, if you remember, headphones, you could split them. You could like pull them apart.
Yeah, okay.
So like you could hold it and your homie could hold it, right? So we sat there and we listened to those two albums each like three times, just super quiet, just trying, you know, just like understanding that it was some of the best stuff I'd ever heard, but also that I had no idea what they were saying, like just really no way to grasp what they were telling me, but knowing that it was something that just like spoke to me. And So your
first experience with hip hop was on West Coast G-Funk.
It was. So as an East Coaster, you know, that's how it went down. But immediately found the Mobb Deeps of the world and Wu-Tang Clan. You know, and not to be the white boy who grew up in the 90s, but, you know, Eminem. At the end of the day, like, it's just kind of what it is.
Is Eminem the greatest full time?
Well-known, greatest well-known rapper of all time.
Is there one that others don't know of?
It's hard to say. It's, you know,
but
if Big L hadn't gone to jail, man, who knows? There's some guys. See, at the end of the day, I'm a lyricist. I'm a lyricist. I'm about wordplay. And for me, because of that, Shady's always going to be king.
Yeah.
But you know, there's some cats that do it out there. There's definitely some cats that do. I mean, Logic now coming out. I mean, not coming out, dude's huge.
Have you heard that new track, Homicide?
I did, and they put the Chris D'Elia shit on the edit, which is fucking funny because D'Elia is fucking hilarious. Yeah. But
Logic is great. Yeah, I mean, I have this conversation with a lot of people. So I grew up in Long Beach. Speaking of Snoop Dogg,
okay,
in the 80s on the east side of Long Beach, where that. Where Snoop Dogg's from in that. So that's my hood. And So I grew up with West Coast hip hop. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I remember when my cousin was listening to, you know, when NWA first came out and things right. like that. And then, you know, Ice Cube, all that shit. So to me, that's always, you know, my favorite era to me, that, you know, NWA to early G-Funk up right, until right. probably about, you know, Tupac's All Eyes on Me. Okay. And then after that, I think a lot of, you know, things happen. There's good stuff that came out after that, but I think there was some dark days there too. A lot of No Limits sold, a lot of bourbons and lax, and, you know, things like that. There's some dark days, no pun intended. That were not great. And you know, I have this conversation, my buddy and I had this conversation the other day actually about Greatest of All Time. And you know, there's other people I think you can put in the conversation. You know, Nas is great.
Nas doesn't have the longevity for me.
He's
got three good albums.
Oh, three? That's it, you think?
I'll give him three.
What are your three?
I'll give him the first three.
Illmatic's a great album.
It's good, but it's not. It's, you know,
when he
Illmatic was especially as a New Yorker, that was sure. like I knew
that's
that
a benchmark.
Dude.
That's
the thing.
That's
like
a benchmark.
The dude who was rapping on that album, like I knew that dude.
Yeah.
Like I can show you that dude. I can take you to New York to this day, and I can show you that dude.
Yeah. Well, that's funny because that's why I always say West Coast rap and early hip hop in West Coast spoke to me so much because I saw the things they were talking about. I knew those guys.
Right,
I knew
right.
that was literally, you know, I mean, I've literally met, you know, Warren G, Nate Dogg, things like that, and a lot of those guys. So it's, you know, I mean, not only did I metaphorically know guys like that, mm-hmm. see, but I mean, I remember when I couldn't go to school because the riots were happening,
right?
I mean,
right,
shit like that.
Right,
so, like,
right.
when music came out about it, I'm like, yeah, dude, it's fucked up back then, you know.
Well, see, and that's kind of the thing about it is that, you know, hip hop is in a state now where it's just like, you know, it's like you said, there used to be things going, it used to be like these guys used to be fucking criminals, bro. These guys used to. You know, we had things like the LA riots going on. We had things like, I mean, these dudes, like NWA was putting out music and like, and Eminem, well, not so much Eminem, but it happened a little bit with him. But like a lot of hip hop music it was the last rock and roll, man. They were buying these albums and burning them in the fucking street.
Yeah.
And I just remember watching those news reports and being like, I got to get my hands on
gotta
that. I got to hear
that.
They're burning it. Adults are burning it. Oh,
that
fuck. I got to
yeah.
hear. That means I definitely got to hear this shit. Like. That you'll never see that again.
Well, I think part of what it goes back to, and that's one of the things my buddy and I talked about too, is like it's such a this interesting history that is actually happened kind of in our lifetime almost.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also was when the problem with hip hop now is that it was genuine at first. Like you said, these people were criminals.
Right.
They came from this life, and the things they were like, people always talk about, they hear the first NWA CD and like, oh, that's so dark, or that's so crazy, this and that. I'm like, well, no, you understand that album had to happen because I living in LA where I didn't see anything, like I mm-hmm. saw that was happening to me
right.
and my cousins. You know, I grew up in a Mexican family. Most of my older cousins were West Side Longos, biggest gang in Long Beach,
right.
Mexican gang. I mean, I saw this shit happening.
Right.
So it was like, it was just a boiling point. It was a matter of time. And now they're just rapping about things that other people rapped about before them. And it's
exactly.
like, it's not genuine, which makes it so hollow, you know?
You can't be 17 with 35 fucking tattoos, man. You haven't earned 35 fucking tattoos
right, yeah,
at 17.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You got
like,
a teardrop tattoo
yeah,
or something. Yeah, like, come
the
on,
fuck
man.
Out of here,
yeah.
man.
It's like when Lil Wayne talks about being a gangbanger and in the Bloods and stuff.
Well,
I'm
fuck
like,
you. Birdman adopted you when you were 11.
Dude, I know. I'm like, dude, you were rapping on Millionaire Cash Money record videos. You were 13, motherfucker.
Bag that yeah. ass up. Still the best yeah. verse he ever had. They didn't say shit on it.
That's when hip hop was great, and there's still some great artists. There's been shines of things. I think you know, the first two Lupe Fiasco's first two albums are fucking amazing, in my opinion. That guy, I still go back and listen to songs on the Food and Liquor or the Cool album, and I still catch new metaphors. That guy's fucking. That guy's metaphors will fucking. I don't know if anyone has better like metaphors, like compound metaphors than Lupe Fiasco
does. He does well. One of my favorites I always go back to is Immortal Technique.
Immortal Technique was great,
as a New Yorker.
Yeah.
And like I see him, he's starting to get out there a little more. You know, Atmosphere as a group, they're starting to do a little bit more, who I fucking loved back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's definitely some intelligent hip-hop out there still. There's some young cats coming up. This cat, J.I.D., that I really get down with, he's out there. And, you know, there's definitely some good new hip-hop, but it's it's become mainstream.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, is really, it's become mainstream. And as much as I think it's probably a good thing, but it's dead, you know.
Yeah.
It's dead. It's music is dead in general. Really, I mean, mainstream music at the end of the day. It's so, you know, and not, you know, producers, but whatever. It's a product, man. It's a fucking product that they're building.
Well,
for
yeah,
you.
There's, you know, there's the, it's just, what is, God, I read this, kind of, there was this video this guy did where, like, every pop song is like the same three chords, just in a slightly different variation. Like,
right.
And it's
right.
just, it's the same exact thing. And, you know, it follows, it's just a formula. You just drop in the different.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and so there's no action. And, you know, it's a song that has, like, four words in it, but 18 people wrote it. Like, how the-
right. No, and that's what's ridiculous. You know, I was reading this thing this a couple years ago now. It was that song with what's his name? Bruno Mars, Uptown Funk.
Uh-huh.
And I was reading an article about how they were producing the song, and they decided to make it, I forget what the numbers are, but like, let's say like your standard pop song is like 110 BPM beats per minute. Mm-hmm. They decide to make it 105 BPM.
Just like a slightly slower.
Like,
slightly,
so it's kind of stand out from everything else. And that song was fucking huge.
Yeah.
Like, and it did stand out from everything else. So yeah. And that kind of reading that, and I don't know how much truth that there is to it, but you know, it could be a bullshit.
That's all it takes.
But you know, that it definitely spoke to kind of like the formulaic way that things are made.
Well, also a song like that, I think, is people like, oh, I like this song. I'm like, no, you like this song because it's eight other songs put together that
right,
you like.
Right,
you know,
right,
this
exactly.
is a James Brown song that you like, and a Michael Jackson song.
Exactly.
Like just, exactly. You know, it's an amalgamation of all these other songs that you like.
Right, exactly. Which is, I mean, fucking, it's postmodern era, right? I guess that's the times we're living in. But, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I see it a lot with movies now, too.
Sure. Any art. You know? Most art like that. You know, I mean, you look in the last few years, almost every movie that comes out is either a sequel, part of a franchise, or a remake.
That's it.
You know.
And even the new shit, man. Like, I got this, you know, it just ended. Everybody's talking about it. So, and I'm behind it like I am everything else in my life. But this fucking Game of Thrones.
Okay.
So, me and my girl are catching up. We're watching it. And I fought it. I'm a big believer in fighting popular thing. Like, if everybody's watching Game of Thrones, I'm going to not watch Game of Thrones. But this thing got to the point
where...
I've
still never seen Titanic, like, so...
check it out, bro. I don't want to ruin that thing for you. But, you know, so eventually... Whatever, regardless, I broke down and we're watching it. And the big thing I heard about it that people would tell is, like, you're never going to see who dies. You're never going to see it coming.
Yeah.
You're never going to see where this story's turning. They'll throw it. And I've seen every fucking twist and turn coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're just so advanced as an audience at this point, man. We're just – and you got a lot of comic book stuff sitting around here.
Yeah.
But you got to
be
getting sick of the movies at this point, man.
Yeah. I mean, I still see them because, you know, I'm a comic book nerd at heart. Most of them are fairly, again, it goes back to, they're formulaic. It's just fill in the blanks. It's like a Mad Libs. You just fill in a couple blanks, but it'll come out the same. There's a couple standouts every now and then. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, that's just kind of like, okay. I will say this. I always say I know it's the last 20 minutes where I get bored, because the big fight scene is the worst part of the movies, because you're like, yeah, they're going to win. The, right. You know, Captain Marvel's not going to die at the end of her movie.
Right.
Like,
right.
She's going to win. like I already know when the sequels, release date to the sequel's already been, you know, that we already know when it is. So it's the story leading up to it, if they can make it interesting for me, is what, you
right,
know, where
right,
where I can get invested, you know.
I liked the one with Chris Pratt.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that was a good one. I liked that. That entertained me.
Did you see Thor Ragnarok?
I did not.
I suggest that.
I haven't
seen
that.
If you like Guardians of the Galaxy, you'll like Thor Ragnarok.
Okay, I'll check that one out. I'll check that one out.
It's, I don't know if you're a movie guy.
I'm a big, so that's kind of why I say this. It's kind of like, if you ask me, I'd like to consider myself a bit of a buff, like,
yeah,
at the end of the day. But that's kind of my problem with it, is like, I see very, like, especially with the amount of comic book movies that have come out recently,
yeah,
I feel like it's just that there's no budget left in Hollywood for, like, I just want to see a fucking another Die Hard, man. Or
yeah,
I want to see
something good.
Or an original action film of some sort. You know what I mean? I want to see.
Well, they don't take chances, because they have these tentpole movies. I mean, they're making Fast and Furious 10.
Yeah.
Plus, they have the spinoff now with, like, that Hobbs and Shaw. It's like The Rock and Jason Statham.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. But even fucking Tarantino's not. Even he's making the same shit,
yeah,
now. Like, you know, he's, yeah, just made. Last one, it's just fucking Reservoir Dogs with fucking cowboys,
yeah,
dude. Like,
God, I never thought. I didn't actually watch that movie, because I actually really. I don't really like Tarantino that much. I discovered early on, I don't think he's that talented. I think he's a fantastic, I think if he wrote movies and someone else directed them, they'd be better. I think he gets too up into, like, jerking off over his own. I put it like this.
I'll give you that. Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino masturbates to a picture of himself masturbating.
I would.
That's the type of guy Quentin Tarantino is. You know, like, he's that into himself.
Well, that begs the question of how he got the original picture. Yeah.
Right. Just a selfie stick or something. Like, something, yeah.
It's a chicken in the egg,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, right. What came first? We know it came in the end.
There's too many jokes there.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I kind of figured early on that I realized, like, I don't think this guy's as good as everyone thinks he is. I mean, when you think about it, Pulp Fiction's a great movie, I think.
I love Pulp Fiction.
Reservoir Dogs is a almost scene-for-scene remake of a Chinese pulp movie. Jackie Brown, not really that great.
Jackie Brown's not my favorite.
I love the
Kill Bills, though.
Kill Bills on first viewing, not a huge fan.
No.
I've rewatched them more recently, and I've softened my stance. I don't love them. I don't hate them. Like, I think they're fine. I think they're fine.
I'll say this. I've never seen, like, a straight, like, cut them up scene, like, when she fights at the end of the first one, when she fights,
yeah,
the crazy 88. Like, that, as far as, like, brutality, like, obviously completely sensational, but, like, one person just cutting up, like, a million fucking dudes, like, that to me was a great fucking scene.
You have to get on board for what it's going to be, I think.
They, yeah, they, yeah,
a complete
absolutely.
Send up
absolutely.
Of, you know, 70s kung fu movie.
See, like, the thing I like about Tarantino will do things like, you know, especially with the first Kill Bill, like when she fights Lucy Liu, it's like she says something like you're not going to last 4 minutes against me.
Yeah.
And then from that moment to the moment that she, like, slices the top of her head off,
yeah,
is 3 minutes and 59 seconds.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I like things like that. I'm a poet at the end of the day. So I like shit like that. But, I can see what you say. I can definitely see what you're saying with, like, he probably jerks off to a picture of himself jerking off, like, you know, that scene in Reservoir Dogs, the famous shot of them, like, walking.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
smile on his face is just pure, like, I know how I know that a million yeah. fucking virgins are going to have this poster in their college dorm room
yeah.
for the next 60 fucking years.
He's
like,
just thinking, like, I'm totally nailing
this. Yeah,
right
I'm
now.
Killing it. Like, I'm killing this right now. They're not even ready for me. I liked Django, though. Django, I thought, was a fun one.
I did like Django. I didn't like Inglourious Bastards.
Oh, that's shit. Inglourious Bastards is shit.
And Hateful Eight, I started watching it, and I'm like, I don't like this. I don't want to watch it.
It's
interested
fun.
In the Hollywood, the next one that's about...
I just watched the preview.
Did Yeah, I haven't seen the preview yet. How? Yeah, that,
it looks interesting.
Okay,
I'm more interested to see Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio.
I feel like you
together
can,
than anything else.
I feel like you can't. It'd almost be impossible to miss, right? How do you fuck that up?
Yeah,
it's you know, the subject matter, the, you know, the helter skelter, the time frame. Yeah, how do you fuck that?
No, it's got all the parts. Yeah, it's definitely got all the fucking parts there to be a good movie. We'll see though. We'll see. That's the problem though. Sometimes he got too much. Sometimes, you know. Yeah. Sometimes he got too much there.
Well, in his directorial style, Ken, really, he wants to go weird directions, so he may go, you know, force the things that you like about Leonardo DiCaprio as an actor and make him go against type because it's his movie and he wants him to be a unique,
it now makes
him unlikable, you know, which those type of things you could fall into.
See, but that's the thing with those two guys in particular, like especially growing up in the 90s, it's like those two actors for me are they're the ones that I've had the biggest 180 swing on. Like from when I was in middle school, and you know, the beginning of high school, it's like these guys are pretty boys. These are like all the girls actors, right? Like that's like they act in those movies. Like they're the pretty boys, and then Brad Pitt
does Fight Club.
Yeah, Brad Pitt does Fight Club, and Leonardo DiCaprio does Catch Me If You Can and Gangs of New York. And like, I think I fucking like these guys. God damn it! And then Brad Pitt does Snatch, and you're like, that's like one of the coolest fucking roles I've ever seen in my goddamn life. And you know, and like that's at the end of the day, you look at it like those two guys and Damon. I think, you know, those are the Brandos and the De Niros of our era at the end of the day, man.
Well, you look at, you know, God, Leonardo DiCaprio and like Wolf of Wall Street or The Departed. I mean, yeah, absolutely. You're like, this guy is a fucking talented, brilliant goddamn actor.
Great actor.
Yeah, you can't, you just, like, Catch Me If You Can, that's a great. Fucking awesome.
Fucking
that movie doesn't come up enough.
People don't talk about
how good that movie is.
And it's got Tom Hanks, who is just fucking amazing. Like, if you don't like Tom Hanks, like,
right, yeah. You know. Come on, that's big. Big, best role ever.
FAO shorts, man, playing the piano.
All right, let's see. God, we've been here for an hour and 20 minutes already. Okay, we're going to buzz through a couple things real quick, and then we're going to get out of here. I've never been to New York.
All right.
Never been to New York. Honestly, never had a huge desire.
Okay.
I feel like it's a place I should go and visit, at least.
I'll say this. The only reason I would say you should go visit it is because, honestly, as someone who's like, I fucked around with it for a year and a half doing stand up, but like, I've been on stage in the Cellar like 10 times, dog. Like, there's that little area downtown where like you're gonna be able to hit a bunch of clubs and like knock out, you know, some open mics and like kind of like I would do it like just as a comedian from a comedian standpoint. That's what I would go for.
Okay,
and that's kind of like, and that's the thing. The thing I love about New York is the seediness of it, man.
Yeah.
Like, and that's slowly going away at the end of the day.
Sure, it's
getting super fucking clean.
Times Square is all shiny now. There's no hookers.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I remember like Lower East Side, which is where I met my fiance. She was living at she was part of a theater group. They all kind of lived there, and it was a theater, real hippie situation going on. It was cool. But they all lived down on Clinton Street in the Lower East Side, and it was, you know, beautiful, and, you know, it had no care. That was the thing. It was nice, and it was like, it was white, and everybody was happy.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah, you're like, this is in New York.
No, that was, and my dad lived in the same neighborhood when I was, you know, 8 years old, and it was fucking, it was junky. It was like Zombieland out there with the junkies, like, and like, this sounds fucked up, but I miss it.
Yeah, sure.
I miss it. You know, it took.
I get it. There's.
It used to take New York. Used to have to be a certain kind of breed. You used to have to have a certain something to live there, and I'll say this: like last time I was home, a few months ago, I walked into one of my favorite bars where they were built on the chicken wing.
Yeah,
built on it for years. Like their whole fucking thing was, we got chicken wings and they're delicious. And the bartender was a vegan and gave me shit for eating chicken when I walked in there. I was like, are you, like, what happened? Who the fuck are you? Happened? Right. Like, get the fuck out of my bar right now. Who are you? And this, I mean, I see that everywhere, but it's, I part of me always thought New York was immune to it, but I guess not. But I, you know, it's worth seeing, man. It's okay. A beautiful town. The architecture is beautiful. It's, the food is off the fucking hook.
What's the one thing I should see if I go?
The one thing you should see.
Best thing to see. What do you got to do?
Best thing to see. What do you got to do?
Is it like a neighborhood or a place or what do you see? You see Brooklyn now. Where do you go?
Just, I would say just walk around. Walk around, not in Times Square. Like, go to the Lower East Side. Go to, you know, walk around in random neighborhoods, okay. Man. Go to, you know, just the beauty. You know, one of my favorite things to do in New York City for my whole life, since I was 5 years old, I left when I was 25, 26, something like that. Mm-hmm. I used to go sit on the steps of Union Square and just fucking watch people.
All right, that's
just watch
cool.
people.
Okay,
it's entertaining, man. You see a lot. It's got a vibe to it. It's got New York's very much about being in New York.
Yeah,
you're part of it, you know. And because of that, a lot of people don't leave. Once they get there, it's always been everyone from everywhere else, but they stay there when they get there because it is very much a vibe. But yeah, I'd say for the city that's left for the city today, I'd say, you know, just walk around, get a piece of it, because it's still got its culture, it's still got the vibe, you got
to find it a little more.
Everybody's doing something crazy. You're gonna see some crazy shit, man. Like, you know, it's never not entertaining.
All right.
It may not be the city I fell in love with, but it's never not entertaining.
Still something there.
You know, I can't tell you. Go see a museum. Go see a building.
That's
you know.
Union Square. I'll check. Okay.
Yeah. You go. You sit on Union Square. You get a pack of Marlboro Reds. You sit on the steps, and you spend a couple hours there, and you get to see some
figure
shit.
Figure out some parts of life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. And then, obviously, as a comedian, I would go hit all the clubs, man. Because
okay. that's eventually I will. But that's I think maybe this fall, one of my partners and I might be going to New York.
Yeah,
so.
Go hit them, man. Cause, and that's the, I will say that that's the beauty. You know, we talked about things like, you know, like you were saying, you know, you got guys out here that just do the comedy club open mic. And then, like, the thing about New York is you can go do that. You can hit a mic every fucking night, sometimes two or three. And you only have to walk a few blocks. And that, you know, that goes for comedy. That goes for music. That goes for anything else.
Yeah.
So there is still that vibe of, you know, it's an artist town. It's not as cultivating as it once was, but it's still an artist town.
All right.
Yeah.
While I'm there. Best pizza in
Patsy's, 119th and First Ave.
Patsy's, 119th. Okay.
Might be 118th. I forget.
Okay. Patsy's.
The weed out here in the Pacific Northwest is good. But yeah, Patsy's. Hands down. Forget about it.
Speaking of food, food in Spokane. When I moved to Spokane, there's a couple places that people told me I had to go eat, and I did.
I bet they serve cheeseburgers.
There's one of the
places. I love Spokane. I feel like I'm being a dick about Spokane
No. So, like, I started eating places people would tell me about, and I'm like, and I actually started asking people when they'd recommend a place, be like, did you grow up in Spokane? If so, I don't want your suggestion. Because something in this MS-ridden municipal water system has killed your fucking taste buds. But the two places the most people rave about that I fucking hate in Spokane are Zips and Pizza Rita. Have you ever had either of those places?
Yeah, they're both hot fucking garbage.
They're fucking
garbage.
Trash, right?
Yeah, I once had someone explain to me that Pizza Rita was good pizza because the dough is sourdough. And I was like, that doesn't, like...
Is that what it is? Is that why the
dough
sucks so bad?
Because it's sourdough bread. That's what they fucking use.
It's terrible.
It's terrible. It's fucking terrible. And Zips...
It's not unedible, but there's nothing special about it. It's fine.
Yeah,
you can eat it, but it's nothing that I've... Like,
they act like they're better than fast food, and you're not.
Yeah, you're...
You're not. You're not.
Yeah, you're not.
You're half a step above Wendy's, let's be real.
Right, that's it. In their food, honestly, I think I'd rather eat at Wendy's than I would at Zips.
The fries, for sure. The fries suck from Zips.
Any place that has crinkle cut fries reminds me of fucking, like... Poor, like, fucking food stamps at a goddamn, like, your school lunch program or something.
I feel like I got, like, a Little League game after I eat some fucking crinkle cut fries. Yeah, fuck that.
Okay. Good. I'm glad.
No, I'm with you on both of those. They can both suck my balls.
That makes me feel a little more validated. Okay. Willie, it's been good talking to you, buddy. This has
absolutely
been nice, man.
Absolutely.
We'll do this again sometime. Before we go, how about you shout out your social media, where people can find you, the band's websites, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Free the Jester, Free the Jester on Facebook and www.freethejester.com and Free the Jester on Instagram. We might have a Twitter. I assume it's Free the Jester. The reason we picked the name is because it's the only fucking shit that comes up when you Google it.
All right.
And it's got some poetic justice to it. And then From Us Comes Knowledge. Also From Us Comes Knowledge on Instagram and Facebook. I'll let you figure out the initials on that one. And then you can follow me, Willie Woosticks. I'm the only Willie Woosticks on Instagram or Facebook. No underscores or numbers or definitely letters. But no numbers or underscores or anything like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, man, check it all out. Give it a follow. I appreciate it. The bands appreciate it. Just out here, trying to hustle up a lunch, man, doing some art, trying to make some music, trying to have some fun and, break up the monotony of fucking life, man.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Well, guys, go check out Willie Woosticks. Check him out. Find him. Find Free the Jester and From Us Come Knowledge, both of his bands. Check him out. Find out when you can see them live next, and definitely don't miss it. Make sure and follow them, guys. And as for me, let's see. You can find me tomorrow night at the Wagon Wheel in Nine Mile Falls with Adam Kessler and Michael Glatzmeyer, and then I'll be down in I will be at the Intersection Bar in New Meadows. Sunday, Monday, I'll be at Rants and Raves in Moscow, then back in town for a couple days, then over to Seattle, guys. So, and Richland, I'm coming back for you for a weekend at Joker's the 20th through the 22nd.
It's
been a couple
man.
Months I've been there, so good. Yeah, man, it's June's a crazy month for me. I'm hoping my girlfriend doesn't break up with me because she's threatened to before when I'm gone. Okay, guys. So
you just gotta fuck her good once a week, and she'll stick around.
Well, when you're gone for a few weeks, that's tough. But I'll try. I'll do my best. Times real good before I go.
Yeah, phone in the rest, but you get her once a week, real good. She'll stick.
She keeps it going. All right, good advice. That's love advice from Willie. If you need more love advice from him, hit him up on Instagram, and he'll make sure your relationship is good. All right, guys. For the Social Hour, I am Deese. For Willie, thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for all listening. And now for my weekly apologies. I'd like to apologize to Spokane Food, all my ex-girlfriends, the presidents, Tom Clancy, the movie Titanic, and Quentin Tarantino. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will see you next week.
That's why I tell every new girlfriend I have, like, yeah, I accidentally bit one of my ex-girlfriend's labias off, so no eating pussy for me.
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production.
And part of the Pants Pending Studios Podcast Network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!